Everybody stayed up late that night, crowding into Cavern Hall to see the giant badger. Grandmum Gervel and her helpers trundled to and fro from the kitchens, bringing lots of delicious food for the guest and for all present. Lana sat staring at the array of fine things. Then form old Dwyrl presented him with an outsized portion of his own personal favourite.
Yerzer! This be's deeper than ever turnip and tater and beetroot pie. If ye don't wish to be offend any cook, you best eat hearty. There be's a plenty more where that come from, and he cooks a good fearsome old villain.
The badger took an amused glance at the dumpy figure of Grandmum Gervel, then set to with a will. Redwallers gazed in wonder as the hungry giant satisfied his appetite. Sister Setiver even ventured a wry wink at Lana.
Och, there's nothing worse than a beast with a wee flimsy appetite picking away at his victuals, I always say.
Lana accepted a full deep dish apple and blackberry crumble from the infirmary keeper. He dug into it with gusto.
Aye, ma'am, but you must forgive me. They tell me I was a very fussy babe. It's a wonder how I survived.
His observation broke the ice. The Redwallers burst out laughing in appreciation of their visitor's ready wit. After the meal, they sat entranced as Lana related his story, which included his meeting with the travellers. The Dibbons had infiltrated the gathering, slowly encroaching until they were sitting on Lana's footpaws. Craning their necks, they stared in goggle-eyed admiration at the one who had confessed to being a fussy babe. Lana gained them extra time, interceding with the elders not to send the abbey babes up to bed. Infants were always a source of amazement to him. He marvelled at their minute size and lack of shyness with strangers. Having finished his narrative, Lana asked Martha to tell him of how she came to be walking. The hermaid obliged willingly. Muggum had managed to scale the badger's footpaws and now sat upon his lap. Tugging the badger's paw, the mole babe succeeded in gaining his attention.
You'm certainly a good creature, Zerlon. How big be's your bed?
Lana looked thoughtful and adopted a serious tone.
It's quite large, and wide too, though I've give up carrying it around with me. Why do you ask, sir?
Muggum waved a tiny paw generously.
You best take my bed, Lon. Up in ye dormities it be's.
The talk went back and forth, encouraged by beakers of mulled October ale for the elders and raspberry cup for the young ones. After a while, the old ones fell into a doze, the Dibbons too, no longer able to keep their eyes open, curled up and slept where they chose. Abbot Carroll took advantage of the lull in the conversation, murmuring to Lana.
Come up to the kitchens. There's an empty storeroom there. We'll set up a sleeping place for you. But before that, I must talk to you, friend. We'll formulate a plan to defeat the enemy and free this abbey. Martha, Torin, Sister Portula, Brother Weld, would you come too? I'd like you to take part in the discussion.
That night, in the quiet of the storeroom, they formulated their plans. Lana's status as a seasoned warrior and his expertise in the ways of his enemy sea rats earned him the main say in the discussion. His ideas made sense to his friends, although his fierce words were in the form of a request.
I need more arrows, good stout shafts and well pointed. Have you any in the building?
Torin answered.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lanner, we haven't. But I can look for some wood and make your arrows.
Brother Weld interrupted the Otterkook.
Last winter, Brother Gelf and I found an ash tree, which had collapsed outside the east wall. Skipper and his otters helped us to chop the trunk into fire logs. Gelf and I took about 6 sheaves of long branches from it and bundled them up. We planned on cutting them into smaller sizes to use in the orchard for fencing and propping up berry vines, but we never got round to it. They're still piled up under the bell tower stairs. Those ash branches will be well seasoned now, perfect for making arrows.
Torin patted Weld's back.
Good work, brother. Bring them to the wine cellar. Poor Junty Sellahog had a little forge and anvil down there. I can make arrowheads from barrel stave iron. Junty kept a whole stock of the stuff.
Lana looked from one to the other inquiringly.
Flights?
Sister Portula had an immediate answer.
There's a whole cupboard full of grey goose feathers in my room. I'll be glad to see the last of them. 2 autumns back, Sister Setiver fixed the wing of a gosling, whose father was the leader of a goose skein. The geese were so grateful that they donated a load of loose feathers to me. I was supposed to cut the ends and use them as writing quills. Deary me, they gave us enough for 10 recorders to use for 7 lifetimes. Please, Lorna, would you take them? If you relieve me of the burden, I'll recruit a team of elders to shape and bind them to your arrow shafts.
The badger agreed readily.
Thank you, sister. There's no better flight for a shaft than a goose feather. I've been using gull feathers from the northeast shores, but they don't have the strength and firmness of good goose plumage.
Martha spoke.
You'll have a full supply of arrows, Lorna.
Stretched out on a heap of clean sacks, the big badger gazed up at the ceiling, sure now of what he was going to do.
No beast can live without food and water,